It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
You're back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. And very excited to have this interview because what he doesn't know is that my ex used to own a restaurant. So uh-oh. I am so into this topic. It's crazy. So Damien McGavro has written a book called The Underground Culinary Tour, How the New Metrics of Today's Top Restaurants Are Transforming How America Eats. Welcome to the program, Damien.
Thank you, Jill.
So, all right, before we start gossiping about restaurants in general, tell us what's going on with you? How'd you get to this place? Why you write this book? Where were you born? Let's start there.
I was born in Haddonfield, New Jersey. And my first job in the restaurant business was at the in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, neighboring town. And I was a busboy.
And how old were you?
I was 16 years old.
Okay.
And I learned one very important lesson at this job. The general manager saw that I had a liking to it. I mean, I just loved being a busboy because you were always sort of right in the middle of the action and really loved it. And so he said, look, if you want to be successful in this business, you only need to know one thing. And I was like, okay, what's that? It's like, all you have to do is exceed guest expectations. And when you think about it, I thought it was pretty cool then, but even, you know, fast forward to my career, it's actually still relevant today in the hospitality industry. It is all about exceeding guest expectations.
Don't you think it's like that in any industry? By the way, your publicist is sitting with Mark, and I think she's nervous right now. So I want you right now, Megan, to calm down. He's doing great. All right, good. You know, not everybody brings their own publicist. This is exciting for me. Thank you for bringing your publicist.
She's great.
Yeah. You know, that's easy for you to suck up. She's right here. Wait till you see what he says when you leave. Okay. So I think that that's probably true in a lot of different industries. But as I said, you know, I besides being a foodie and loving the whole, experience, the theater of going to a restaurant, I was in a customer service business. I would imagine that exceeding expectations in any client service industry is something you want to do. But, you know, the restaurant business is so weird because everyone's like, I'm a good cook. I'm going to open a restaurant. Like, it's so easy. There's so many different parts of it. So you started as a busboy. You're 16 years old. Did you go to culinary school?
No, I didn't. I also had a love for finance as well. And so I actually went to LaSalle University and studied finance. And then after graduating, I went to work on Wall Street for a couple of years. And
what'd you do there?
I did high yield corporate finance for Dillon Reed.
DR, the old Dillon Reed.
Yes.
Wait a second. Let me just think if I can remember who took them over. UBS, right. So UBS took them over,
yeah, right.
And then it all disappeared, and all that old brand disappeared.
It was such an amazing company because they really were all about relationship banking, and they would take such great care of their clients, and it definitely shaped me who I am and how the importance of client relationships and taking care of the client.
All right, you do that for a while. How long?
I did it for 2 years and then went
off. That was enough.
But I think I worked 4 years in 2 years.
I know. It's one of those things like if you talk to people who were in that business, they'll say, you know, I made a pile of money, but I actually killed myself, right? The
yes.
Hours are insane.
They're pretty insane.
You know,
90-100 hours a week. But I had an amazing experience there. I learned so much.
And then what?
You know, and one of the things that I learned is, you know, raised a couple $1 billion of capital, was on part of it of these deal teams and would go around with these CEOs. And so we were financing their dreams. And I really wanted to really be an entrepreneur and do something on my own and do something in hospitality.
All right. But you always loved the restaurant business.
Always.
And Are you a foodie? Are you someone? Yes. You're admitting it.
I'm Italian.
Okay. So Mark, the best producer in the world, is also a foodie. He's also into, like, he sent me step-by-step directions about how to make a perfect cup of coffee. And he's like, you've got to stop using your Nespresso.
He's right, by the way.
He's like, he'll send it to you after because he's up, you know, just completely.
Wait until we talk about coffee.
Okay. So, you know, I also need just, you know, the drug, right? So I need the drug coffee. But I appreciate that. But you love the business. What about the hospitality business that you like so much?
I love the notion of the feeling that you can really provide when you provide amazing service, incredible food, incredible wine, and you're delivering it with such ease. But this whole notion of reading a table, because each sort of, you know, guest experience, you know, the customer is different. So how do you deliver a consistent guest experience is important, but also one that's personalized. And I'm sure if you've had one of those meals, you'll remember it for the rest of your life.
Well, I will say this, that my ex used to say that if you serve one bad meal, that the diner will tell 10 people. And if you serve one really good meal, that diner may tell one, maybe two people. So the idea of not screwing up is a pretty big, important part of the restaurant industry, as well as exceeding expectations. Now, when we come back, we're going to hear more about your life, which is great. And by the end, you're going to also tell us secrets and things to watch out for when we're dining so that we're not getting rooked by the industry. And also would be interested to hear how you actually met Danny Meyer, who I've interviewed, by the way, for a Sunday morning piece at CBS News. So I have a little touch with that, just a tiny bit. Mark, am I okay here time-wise? Are we good? Okay. So before we get back to our interview with Damien Mogavro. I like that. I want to say it differently, but it is your name.
It's Damien Mogavro.
Mogavro. Gav. It's a tough one. Schlesinger's not easy either, my friend. Just trust me. Mogavro. The Underground Culinary Tour, how the new metrics of today's top restaurants are transforming how America eats. Before we go to the break, what is the most important class that you took in college to prepare you for what you do now and what you did in banking?
That's a great question. I actually, one of my favorite classes was actually at business school. The service management class.
Really?
Which is phenomenal.
Okay. Yeah. I like to know that. I always say to people the single best class I ever took to prepare me, not for radio, not for TV, but in analysis and financial analysis is statistics. I love statistics. It's also good for your craps table.
I love numbers.
You're a numbers man. All right, more with Damien in a second. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
It's Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call or email anytime, 855-411-JILL, or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. Damien, say your last name.
Mogavro.
See? Oh, he's got a little sore throat. He's got a thing. Mark is like looking at me like, why is he coughing? I don't know. He's coughing. He's talking. He's hawking his book. The Underground Culinary Tour, how the new metrics of today's top restaurants are transforming how America eats. And Damien, you fell in love with the restaurant industry when you were 16.
Yes.
But you took a little foray into finance and business. You went to business school. You also worked at a big, I would call it like at the time was a mid-size investment bank?
Or boutique investment bank.
Boutique investment bank, Dillon Reed. The old DR. So many of those banks are just like gone. You know, it's weird, actually. And then you said, I want to be an entrepreneur. Yes. What did that mean? Like, what happened then?
Well, I wanted, I loved investment banking, but felt I wanted to really.
Which, by the way, is something you don't hear people say that much. I love investment banking.
I mean, look, this was many years ago, and it was very much client, you know, oriented, you know, banking. But it was, I really wanted to be an entrepreneur, so I actually went to Harvard Business School to really broaden myself out. And
the food stinks in Boston, though.
Well,
whoa! Is that a provocative thing to say? I shouldn't say it, though. I lived in Providence for 10 years, and any time I would go out in Boston, I'd say the food's so much better in Providence than it is in Boston. I found Boston, I mean, there's a couple of like outliers, but this is like, when were you in Harvard?
Graduated in 96.
Okay. So, okay, that's good, about the same time. So there were some good restaurants, but it wasn't cutting edge. There wasn't that many. There weren't that many exciting things going on in Boston and Cambridge at the time. I thought there was like much more interesting stuff going on in Providence, where, you know, who knows who you could see next to you. You never sat with the back to the window, I'll tell you that much. So after Harvard, then what happened?
And then I actually did a field study, continued at Harvard, did a field study that got published as a final exam. And I worked very closely with a professor of mine, Gary Loveman, who you know, was in service management and wrote the Service Profit Chain, which is you know, just a great you know, theory, where if you take care of your employees, the employees, you know, take care of the guests take care of the bottom line. And so I did a field study and continued on in themed restaurants. And it later got published as a Harvard Business School case study.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Gary Loveman is, you know, has been a great mentor of mine, who went and ran Caesars Entertainment, which is, which, you know, when I started my company, became an important client, you know, of mine.
So at that time, though, did you use a term about a themed restaurant,
yes,
right? What is a themed restaurant? Does that mean like you go and Chuck E. Cheese or something? What is a themed restaurant?
I mean, it's a restaurant that essentially transports you to feeling in a different sort of place.
Uh-huh.
And I guess every good restaurant should transport you. And I guess these are just more, you know.
But they have a theme specifically. So for, let me throw a name at you. So I knew this guy in Providence named Ned Grace. He started the Capitol Grill,
sure,
right? But he also had another restaurant called Bugaboo Creek.
Yeah.
Is that a themed restaurant?
You could say so.
Would
yes.
both be a theme, like Capitol Grill Steakhouse? Is that a themed restaurant or not so
not
much?
Not in a traditional, you know, sense. I mean, you typically wouldn't say a steakhouse is a themed restaurant, but. But in any event, that's what I, that was a fun project, you know, after business school. And then I ended up, you know, getting back into restaurants. And that's really where I saw the inefficiencies of the business, where I actually would ask my chefs and managers very simple questions, like who your top and bottom servers, why your food costs go up, why your labor costs go up. And they would look at me and they would just basically make up answers, give me wrong answers. And the thing that was really troubling was that they would spend half their time on administrative tasks as opposed to being in the kitchen or in a dining room floor. And I always say nothing good happens in the back office. You can't make customers happy. You can't make great food.
Right.
And so I saw this as a real problem for not just you know the small restaurant group that I was working at, but also realized there was an industry problem, and that was you know, the genesis. That problem was you know, the opportunity I saw to really be an entrepreneur and start a company to really address this problem.
So basically, you wanted to bring the discipline and your knowledge, the numbers side, and bring it to this business you're passionate about. And it's kind of like brilliant because you get to do a little bit of both, these two things that you love. And as you said, there was a need for it. So give us an example of how some of the metrics that are really important that were not being looked at the time.
Well, I think one of the metrics is that is so important is so one of the things that we invented is a baseball card for servers, and it's sort of like Moneyball for restaurants.
Okay.
And what this baseball card does for servers, so in a traditional baseball card, you have runs batted in and on base percentage.
Right.
But in a server scorecard, you have things like, well, how many times have you sold appetizers? Or how many times have you sold desserts or coffee? And what is your table turn time? All of these are critical metrics that are actually determining the guest experience, and they're also determining, driving revenue and how well you know the menu. And so all this data was buried in the point of sale.
Mm.
And the thing, the company that I started is called Avero. What it does is it transforms that data in the point of sale, which has repository of hundreds of thousands of transactions, and transform it into the cloud, and basically converts it into software as a service, where it makes all of these answers and insights possible for the restaurateurs to make smarter business decisions to really help them provide a great guest experience and do it in a profitable way.
What do you think is the number one complaint of a guest in a restaurant that your metrics will actually address?
Inconsistent guest experience.
Oh, one night, it was good. The next week, it wasn't so good.
How many times has that happened to you? You go into a restaurant, you love it. You go back and you're like, geez, the server doesn't know the menu. They don't know maybe the wine list. Where's my check? I can't find the person. I want to get a second drink. All of these things. And all of that is really a reflection of all those, the inconsistencies are in the data. But when you can mine the data and you can actually see it in this scorecard, you can see, okay, well, this person, and I think, one of the things in the book is I have a story of how this one server did not sell wines by the bottle. And in the scorecard, it showed that they sold, I think it was like 80% less wine by the bottle than their peers. And it turns out that the manager was able to see it very clearly, approached this server, and it turned out that the server was afraid to open up, they were afraid to open a bottle.
So wait a minute. The server has performance anxiety because he's like, I can't get that damn cork out of here. And so now the owner says, hey, let me teach you how to do this so you'll never have to worry about it again.
But,
now
the guy starts... scorecard gave the insight to know that we need to work on wines by the bottle because it's in the data. And so the great thing is then what happens is the manager provided the training, and so now they know how to open the bottle, so they have confidence. And then once you have the confidence, then you feel comfortable selling. And then that person's sales went up to what the average is, even beyond. And then so the guest wins because they're comfortable with asking questions, about the wine list. And then the server makes more money. The restaurant makes more money.
Excellent. We're talking to Damien McGavro. I think I did it right that time.
Perfectly.
Oh, my God. It's Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. When we return, more of Damien and his tips about how, as guests, we can negotiate the restaurants better. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. You ain't got nothing
on me. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. But, I know you guys are out there. You're going out to dinner a lot. You're going out to lunch. My favorite meal, Damien, we're with our guest, Damien McGavro. He's the author of The Underground Culinary Tour, How the New Metrics of Today's Top Restaurants Are Transforming How America Eats. I'll ask Mark's question at the end of the show. He just sent me a note that he wants a specific question answered. I love breakfast. It's like one of my favorite meals. And so, okay, before we went to the break, we were talking about, kind of the experience, and you said that inconsistency is one of those things that people really hate, and your metrics can help that. So when I interviewed Danny Meyer, who's a Union Square Hospitality Group, and he owns a bunch of restaurants in New York. He's also the mastermind behind the Shake Shack, and he wrote the foreword to your book, which is kind of super cool. When I interviewed him for my Sunday morning piece, we were doing a segment about pricing and where menu pricing, how it shakes out, how the almost like the behavioral economics behind how you price a menu. And I asked him straight up, I'm like, is it true that the highest margin glass of wine is the second least expensive on the menu? And he's like, absolutely not. But I talked to so many restaurateurs, maybe who don't use your methods, who said, absolutely, that's the case, because no one wants to say, I'm not going to order the $9 glass of wine, but the $11 glass is okay because I don't want to order the $22 glass. And so the second cheapest glass of wine is usually the one where the restaurant owner may see the best margin. True or not true, Damien?
I would actually recommend going for the bottle list.
Really? The bottle. So the glass of wine is actually a ripoff because there's how many? So there's four glasses in a bottle, right? But what if you're only two people and you really only want a glass of wine?
Can I tell you?
Yes.
You should go out to dinner with people who love wine.
Okay. Well, all right. But booze is a big markup, and you're going to spend it. And so either you should get drunk at home. No, but then you have to get a ride to the restaurant. So how do you navigate? What if you're not a big wine person, but you want to have a nice glass of wine before dinner? Is there a tip to that?
Well, the question is how short of an answer is it, because this is a subject I'm very passionate about.
Obviously, you're leaning in. I love it.
Look, I think that one of the big trends that I talk about in Chapter 10 in Restaurants of Tomorrow is beverage is at the forefront, not an afterthought. And so you've asked the question a couple times, and I'll just answer it about what's the big tip. The big tip is go to restaurants. If you want great food, go to restaurants with thoughtful beverage lists, because the restaurants with thoughtful beverage lists, of course they have great food, but the opposite is not true.
Oh, that's interesting. So if you, but what if you don't know enough to know whether that's a good list? In other words, let's say that just someone's listening and they're like, whatever, in the middle of the country, they're listening to us on, you know, our station in St. Louis or in Minneapolis, and they say, I love this restaurant. They're not foodies, but they like to have a nice glass of wine at dinner.
Sure.
But how do they know whether that, if they go online, they look at the list, how would you know whether or not that's a good list or not?
Well, it's when I say beverage, I'm talking about more than just wine. I'm also talking about beer. So do they have a great craft beer selection?
Uh-huh.
Do they have a great cocktail list? Do they have great coffee? Do they have handcrafted sodas? So when I'm talking about beverage, there's a whole shift in the industry where the restaurateur, these New Guard restaurateurs we'll talk about in a moment, are when they conceive a restaurant, the beverage professional and the owner and the chef are together from the moment they develop the concept, as opposed to the old way of doing it a few weeks before opening, they're like called the beverage vendor. So it's really a whole new way of thinking about it. And so these thoughtful beverage lists are not only great for the guest, but they also are a key driver of profitability as well, and foreshadows a great food experience.
Well, that's interesting. Mark and I went out for a drink last week, and we both like the brown liquors. So we like bourbon, whiskey, rye. And Mark said when he started drinking Bullet, it was how much for a drink? Less than $10. And now you go to, we didn't even go to a fancy place, someplace, you know, whatever, downtown. But how much was it there? Like $16. So it's doubled in probably the last 10 years. Is that all spirits?
I don't believe so.
No. Okay. So, but looking, you said, I love this stat that you had. In 1873, the U.S. had 4,000 independent breweries. After Prohibition, the number tanked to fewer than 100. And today, we've got more than 4,000, and there's 1.5 breweries opening every day. That's too many. They're going to have a shakeout in that business,
so
right?
May I offer a different perspective?
Yeah.
So
we have two minutes before the break.
Great. There's 1.5 new breweries are opening every single day. And some say, well, there's too many. But the facts are that in 1873, you had over 4,000. So one would argue that we are just getting back to normalcy. And this country was never meant to have an oligopoly on beer. And we're actually getting back to our roots. And I think it's an incredible thing what's happening in the craft beer movement. You see just incredible beers everywhere now. And it's really become artisan and local. In one of the chapters, I talk a little bit about Brooklyn Brewery, which they have actually become a global company. But the brewmaster there, Garrett Oliver, is a very talented brewmaster. He wrote the Oxford Companion to Beer, and has actually hosted us on the actual underground culinary tour that we've done.
That's kind of cool. Very short answer before we go to break, and then we're going to talk about the New Guard versus the Old Guard restaurants. If you were just sitting down and you were ordering a drink, a cocktail, and it's the evening, it's the long, you did this really great interview at Jill on Money, it's been fun, but you're settling down, what do you order? One answer.
Pisco Sour at Maison Premier in Brooklyn.
Wow. That would require me going to Brooklyn. You're listening to, I know I get there sometimes, but it's far from where I live. Okay. 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Damian Mogavro, we're going to be finishing up with him in our next segment. And I want to hear about the new versus the old guard. It's going to be exciting. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is like one of the most fun interviews I've done in a long time. Not to be disparaging to other people who are going to be on the show, some of whom your publicist also represents. I don't want her to get mad at me. She's like a good pipeline of good guests. But Damian Mogavro, who has written The Underground Culinary Tour, How the New Metrics of Today's Top Restaurants Are Transforming How America Eats, it's been great having you here, Damian. And so we've gone through and we've done some beverage stuff. Now, let's talk a little bit about, say, a new restaurant or maybe the new way of running a restaurant versus the old guard. Who's doing well? Who's not doing well? And again, this is a national program, so we don't want to be too New York focused.
Sure. So this, first of all, the Underground Culinary Tour is really the backstory of how, our dining experience is being changed. And there's really two things. One is embracing data and technology, and the second is embracing trends from the foodie generation. The restaurant tours doing these two things, I call them New Guard restaurant tours. So, and that's why it's like Moneyball, for restaurants.
Right. So it's like they're treating their team, they're looking at the people who are there. But are those people, you're talking about delivering the service. You're also, I guess, presuming that, are we looking at, say, a metric that will say, look at the menu and say, who ordered, how many of these were ordered, right? How many roast chickens were ordered? Like, I'm the most boring person in the world. When I go to a fancy restaurant, I'll order a roast chicken. If they can make a roast chicken, well, I'm in. Like, that's it. That's like, to me, the quintessential meal. But I might be alone. Maybe other people like, some gloppy white sauce, blah, blah, blah. Do you want your clients who own these restaurants to be customizing their menu for what the people want or for what the expression of their creative abilities?
Yeah, I think one of the things you mentioned is to recognize it's not just a New York audience. And I just wanted to point that out. So let's just say, imagine we are in New Orleans. And
let's go. Let's go. I like to eat there.
And imagine we're not in this, this weather in New York. We're in the courtyard on a beautiful day at Brennan's.
Okay.
In the French Quarter.
Right.
In the French Quarter. And so we get greeted by a friendly server, and he guides us to egg sardou, a Cajun Bloody Mary and Bananas Foster, a dish that they invented. And we have an amazing brunch experience. That's what you see. But what you don't see is it's the technology behind the scenes that is enabling to make sure the restaurant makes sure all the servers are trained the right way, to make sure they don't run out of the ingredients of the dishes that you want. And the technology is that invisible ingredient, if you will, that knows, hey, how many mimosas are you going to sell on a rainy Saturday versus a sunny Sunday versus when a convention is coming into town.
That's interesting.
And that technology is enabling a restaurant tour like Brennan's, which happens to be third generation restaurant, be a New Guard restaurant tour. Oh, and by the way, Slade Rushing's cooking is phenomenal as well, and is embrace a lot of the trends from the next generation and is interpreting to these classics. So that is an example of a New Guard restaurateur that's outside of New York City.
How do you see the advent of the fast casual movement impacting the rest of the restaurant industry?
It's a huge impact. I mean, the fast casual, just by the numbers, is growing three times as fast as the broader industry. But I really do think the bigger trend that I talk about in Chapter 10, Restaurants of Tomorrow, is we see New Guard restaurateurs innovating in ingredients, and we also see the highest quality ingredients in the most casual setting. You now can get a lobster roll in the middle of a traffic island in Manhattan. I mean, just imagine that. I mean, that is, you're getting great quality ingredients everywhere, even Terminal C at Newark Airport. And it's because the consumer is really demanding these great quality ingredients because we've become a nation of foodies. And you're now seeing food become an anchor tenant in most many major real estate development projects.
Okay, before we go to the break, Mark's letting you stay for segment five, which is our short segment, which means you've been good. So that's not my choice, that's his choice. Before we go to the break, if you have to choose to get food on the fly, you're in an airport, you're in a train station, what are you getting?
Well, it totally depends where I'm at. If I'm at, Terminal C, there's a lot of great
options.
You got
to do fast, like a fast food. Like, what's your fast food go-to? You have to do it fast.
What are my options?
Any fast food restaurant that's out there. You just got to pick one fast. Like, you have any Aunt Annie's pretzel in Penn Station? Penn Station is the worst place ever to get food.
Actually, I would go to the Penn C. They've got a great food hall there. And I would take a few extra minutes and go to the Penn C.
Okay.
Incredible. You can actually even get vegan donuts at Cinnamon Snail that are phenomenal.
Okay. I don't even know. The vegan donut thing, he just lost me. Mark, did you roll your eyes at that? Mark is dating a woman who is a carnivore beyond. So, you know, we don't do vegan here. Vegan.
By the way, Pat LaFrieda's got great, cheesesteak two stalls down. So
there you go. All right. Thank goodness. We're talking to Damian Mogavro. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back to finish up the show. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, hang on. We're not doing it this segment because we're with Damian Mogavro, and he is the author of The Underground Culinary Tour. And Damian, Mark, the best producer in the world, would like to know what your death meal is, meaning what would you have as your last meal? And Mark's is eggplant parmesan with zucchini flowers. Megan's is scallops and pasta, bay or sea scallops, the big ones or the little ones? The big ones. Okay. What about you, Damian?
Well, I'll give the simple answer, then I'll give the dream answer.
Okay.
So the simple answer.
It should be your dream answer.
Okay. Well, my dream answer is to have someone else organize an underground culinary tour for me and my friends.
Okay.
And I just show up.
And okay, that's good. But what would the main component, like, give me some of the components.
So, well, the underground culinary tour is, the book is actually based on the real tour, which is 15 stops in 25 hours. And we give our guests a long nap, to get through these 25 hours. And we actually bring in the chef, the sommelier, the barista, the mixologist.
All right, but give me your example. So what's the meal? Give me one of the components.
So one component I would say is definitely Brooklyn pizza. And having a burgundy.
You and the Brooklyn. I'm so over this whole Brooklyn thing. I'm done with it. Forget it. Anyone listening in Brooklyn, I'm sorry. I'm just like done with it. I wish the New York Times stopped covering Brooklyn. All right, mine would be. I agree. I love pizza, but I'm not like so crazy. But I want an unbelievable bolognese as a half order, and then I want the best roast chicken ever, which I had in Paris. And then for dessert, thank you very much. I'm going lowbrow. I want a Carvel cake with a ton of crunchies on it because I'm not a big restaurant dessert person. Damien Mogavro, he is the author of The Underground Culinary Tour. It has been such a delight to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill.
And just keep listening, gang. Your financial questions, we're going to answer them next week. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. See you next week, and thanks for listening.